Hello and welcome to this week's China Horizons. I'm Wu Jia. In this edition, the Provincial People's Congress, the local legislative body in East China's Zhejiang province, has just brought its annual session to a close. It's reported that the meeting has presented a bright future for Zhejiang's economic and social development. In Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region in northwest China, local credit cooperatives are helping farmers to break the shackles of poverty and increase farm production with small loan services. Nanjing Today continues our report on its private car sales boom and how this has affected the local auto-related businesses and the car owners themselves. We'll then look at the private business sector in Wuxi, which is playing an increasingly important role in the local economy. On the road, our travel show is still in northeast China's Jilin province, but Song Yuan will be our last stop in Jilin before we go on to another province. But first, Shen Ting brings you our report from Zhejiang, a coastal province in east China.
Zhejiang Special. In China's political system, the National People's Congress is the country's top legislature, and People's Congresses at the provincial and lower levels are the local organs of state power. They are established through democratic elections and usually have a term of office for 5 years. The first session of the 10th Zhejiang Provincial People's Congress was held from the 16th to the 23rd of this month in the provincial capital of Hangzhou. It was attended by over 600 deputies from across the province. A major task of this year's session was to vote for a new team of provincial leaders who have been charged with the mission of steering the local economic and social programs for the next 5 years. 10 years ago, the province adopted a system of inviting a group of citizens from all walks of life to attend the meeting as observers. This year, 91 such observers heard the work reports made by the provincial administrative and judicial bodies. They were also invited to voice their opinions on political, economic, cultural and social issues. Xiao Zhong from the Provincial People's Congress Standing Committee is responsible for soliciting comments and suggestions from the observers.
The goal of our having observers in the annual legislative meeting is to further cement our relations with the people and provide more channels for the free airing of public opinions. The proposals made by the observers will all be handed over to the Congress deputies for examination and discussion.
21-year-old Li Song from the Zhejiang Broadcasting and Television College was the youngest observer.
I was chosen by the Provincial College Students Association. I was quite nervous when I sat in the meeting hall, but at the same time very excited and proud. I could hardly believe that an ordinary student like me could participate in such an important political conference and express my opinions on any issue I care for.
In the past, the observers were usually chosen through recommendation by grassroots level units and various social organizations. But starting this year, any citizen over 18 can apply to be an observer. 66-year-old Cui Yansheng is a retired engineer from a factory in Hangzhou. He applied last year and is the first person to be approved as an independent observer. During the meeting specially held for the observers, he presented several proposals dealing with issues of concern to ordinary people, such as high housing prices, the re-employment of laid-off workers, and late payment of wages.
I'm always very interested in state affairs and have attended some 20 public hearings held by provincial and municipal governments. But I feel most honored and lucky to be attending this legislative meeting. I think this demonstrates a new leap forward in our building democracy. Before I came, I spoke with many friends and neighbors to seek proposals, comments, and criticism concerning government and administration, and pass them all onto the Congress.
Cui Yansheng says he is inspired by the blueprint drafted in the provincial government's new 5-year development plan, and he believes the new leadership team will guide the local people to a more promising and prosperous future.
That was Shen Ting with Zhejiang Special, a program produced in association with Radio Zhejiang. Next, we head for a remote, less developed area of the country, Boer Tala. is a Mongolian autonomous prefecture bordering Kazakhstan in the north of Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region in northwestern China. Last year, a credit rating system was set up here so that local farmers can have easier access to small loans, Ning Jing reports.
Old Mi has lived in Ba Jiahu, a village in Buertala Prefecture, all his life. Like most of his fellow villagers, he makes a living growing crops and raising a few head of sheep. Old Mi works hard, but could only just manage to make ends meet in the past. With hardly any money left every year, running a big sheep farm had remained a pipe dream, that is, until last year when a credit rating system was introduced to his village. Old Mi says it makes it possible for villagers like him to get small loans from local credit cooperatives.
Anyone who has a credit certificate can get a loan quickly and easily. It's almost like a deposit account. It enables us to apply for small loans so that we can buy cows or sheep or do other things. Usually it's 1,000 to 5,000 yuan. It's been very convenient.
Old Mi now rents a big sheep and cow farm, but he says in the past it was very hard to get loans from credit cooperatives. Many farmers felt it was not worth the trouble, while the credit cooperatives always worried that the loans, if granted, would not be returned on time.
To get a loan those days, you had to write an application first. Then you got it signed by local officials before you were required to find a sponsor. You had to lobby hard for it, and it usually took quite a long time, even if you could get it.
But things started changing at the beginning of 2002 when the Bank of China branch in Buertala, Mongolian Prefecture, trialed its small loan service in some villages. To ensure the smooth implementation of the project, local credit cooperatives have carried out a credit rating system to appraise credit for every household. The families, in turn, are rated at different levels according to their credit records and their ability to run their business. Credit certificates are issued to each of the family members when they need a loan, and the credit cooperatives decide whether and how much to loan to the farmers. The credit rating system has been warmly welcomed by local people. Ba Jiahu village, where Old Mi lives, for example, is a village of good credibility. Each of the 72 families living there is competing to establish a good credit record. They say the small loan service helps them realize their long-term dream of expanding their farm or even starting a small business.
If it were not for the credit rating system and the loans, my dream of running such a big sheep farm wouldn't have come true. Now, with determination and hard work, I'm sure I can achieve much more.
You feel it's your own bank, and as long as you have good credit, you can get loans whenever you need it.
Dong Yelin is an official from Buele City, the capital of Buertala Prefecture.
The small loan service has made farmers realize the importance of credit. They know that they'll get another loan without any problem if the last one is returned on time. The project has helped push economic development in the countryside, increase farm incomes, and restructure the traditional agriculture sector. Its successful implementation has satisfied both farmers and the credit cooperatives.
Since the beginning of 2002, over 400 credit cooperatives in Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region have started the small loan service, accounting for 75% of all local cooperatives. Wang Zhiwu is from the local branch of the Bank of China.
China has a large rural population. It's important to help farmers in their production as we are building our country into a better-off society. And that's our responsibility.
Wang says, thanks to the credit rating system, they have kept the credit record of over 30,000 rural families in Buertala, Mongolian Autonomous Prefecture. 80% of the farmers here have benefited from the project, while 95% of the loans have been returned on time.
Thank you, Ningjing. Now we'll go back to a better off eastern part of the country. Located in one of China's most prosperous areas, Nanjing, the capital of East China's Jiangsu province, has seen a steady increase in its standard of living. Over the past few years, the number of private cars on the roads has risen dramatically. This has both pros and cons for the local auto factories, car dealers, and the car owners themselves, Shan Shan explains.
Nanjing's car market far exceeded the expectations of local automakers and car dealers in 2002. Many say that they had predicted a big increase in private car sales, but few thought it would be so dramatically high. As a result of the high level of purchases, many people found that supply could not match demand, leading to lengthy waiting lists. Instead, they had to place an order first and collect it a few months later. Tai is one of the customers.
None of the dealers I visited last September had a car available. They told me that I had to wait at least 1 month. The supply just fails to match the demand.
But it seems that car dealers are even more worried than the buyers, as they don't want to miss out on an opportunity to make more money.
It's hard to get cars from the auto manufacturers. You have to lobby them hard to provide you with more. Now we don't have any cars in store. They're sold out as soon as they arrive.
Facing the greater market potential, Nanjing's automakers have also tried their best to produce more cars. In a local Sino-Italian joint venture, the assembly line rolls round the clock. Factory officials say none of the staff members there have had any breathing space. When a new style rolls off the assembly line, orders to buy the car are usually placed 3 months ahead. Despite the exciting market potential, however, the car makers also have worries.
There is opportunity and need for expansion for everybody in times of great development, but things cannot always be like this. When the market cools down, some enterprises will inevitably have a difficult time.
On the customer side, the quality of the automobile is also of great concern. A local resident from downtown Nanjing complains that he found the gasoline tank of his new car leaked as soon as he bought it. He got it fixed 3 times in 2 months, but only got his car replaced when the local media exposed his story. According to statistics, 70% of the complaints in 2002 were made about cars priced at 100,000 yuan or lower. In Nanjing, 90% of the cars sold in 2002 fit this price category. Experts predict that the demand for cars will remain high this year. They call for the drafting of laws and regulations concerning consumption. Chen Gang, a professor from Hehai University, says, in addition to the construction of a better road network and more parking lots, auto-related industries and services should also be regulated.
For example, filling station services, gas quality. Laws and regulations and government administration are needed in these areas. None of any individuals or car dealers or the service provider will be able to straighten things out.
Chen Gang says relevant laws and regulations are now being considered. He says the enacting of these regulations will further stimulate consumer demand. But he warns that the consumers should not be hot-headed. They should be better prepared for any expense and even trouble that may come along with owning a car. Zhao Yi is one of those who decided to sell his Audi soon after he bought it.
It's too expensive to own a car. Insurance, gas, parking and highway fees, maintenance, road toll, the list goes on and on. When I found the cost of taxes and upkeep is no less than 20,000 yuan a year, I decided to give it up.
In Nanjing, Joey's story is not unusual. Chen Gang from Hehai University says people should make a decision on whether to buy a car according to reality and their own need for one. It's not a good idea to keep up with Joneses, considering that a car, after all, is a big purchase.
Thank you, Shan Shan. But we are not leaving Jiangsu just yet. Our next report is from Wuxi, the city by Lake Taihu. If you are a regular listener, you may have learned that Wuxi has been one of the hottest destinations in the country for overseas investment. But as Man Li reports, the city's own private business sector is in no way pale by comparison.
Private companies offering high-tech goods and services have expanded greatly, both in size and number, in Wuxi over the past few years. There are currently over 360 high-tech private firms in the city, forming the engine for the city's rapid economic growth. Located in the Xishan Economic and Technological Development Zone, the Wuxi Dawei SciTech Company is one of the city's most outstanding private enterprises. 2 years ago, when it was set up, it was just a small firm with 20 staff members. But now, Dawei has developed into one of China's premier IT companies, with more than 200 employees and net capital of $13 million. Asked about the secret of Dawei's success, company head Bao Kewei says it is due to persistent endeavor in introducing new technologies, as well as a strong research and development team.
We are constantly making concerted efforts to attract the best personnel because we believe talent guarantees the future success of an enterprise. For example, we recruit some of the most outstanding university graduates every year to infuse fresh blood into the company. And we provide them with a lot of training opportunities by collaborating with universities and renowned IT companies such as IBM and Intel.
Taking advantage of its strong team of workers and unyielding efforts in developing new products, the company has successfully completed dozens of high-tech projects over the past 2 years. It is also designated by the state as an industrial base for network security information products. Many private companies like Dawei have set the goal of building themselves into first-class high-tech enterprises since their founding. But there are also firms that were originally engaged in the processing industry and later shifted their focus to high-tech production in order to survive the fierce market competition. Zhao Ming, leader of a private processing enterprise, notes that its transformation to a high-tech manufacturer has become a primary concern for many private enterprises.
A lot of private enterprises like mine fail to go further after developing to a certain scale because they are technologically restricted and find it hard to compete with others. So it is vital for them to adjust their strategy and shift from capital accumulation to developing new technology and new products. Only by continuously improving their technical competence can an enterprise enhance its competitive edge and carve out a foothold in the market competition.
Over the past few years, Wuxi's municipal government has extended considerable help and support to private enterprises by offering preferential policies and timely and efficient services. It holds an annual high-tech trade fair for private enterprises each year, which provides an important link between researchers, inventors, and manufacturers. The introduction of high and new technology has helped the private business sector in Wuxi take a giant stride forward in recent years. Their annual industrial production output currently makes up 40% of the city's total. Moreover, many of them have begun to explore the international market and become major earners of foreign exchange for the city. Last year, exports by private enterprises in Wuxi earned $140 million, an increase of 300% over the previous year.
Thank you, Man Li. And that brings us to our travel segment on the road. For the last few weeks, we've been touring Changchun, Jilin, Yanbian, Tonghua, and the Changbai Mountain in northeastern China's Jilin province. Today is our last stop in Jilin before we move on to another province. It's Songyuan, a small city with a very unique water landscape in the north of Jilin province.
Songyuan is a small city by the beautiful Songhua River in northern Jilin province. It borders the Inner Mongolia Autonomous Region in the west and Heilongjiang province in the north. If you listened to our program last week, you may remember we visited Tonghua City, which is fabled for its spectacular mountain views. Songyuan, however, is richly endowed with hundreds of rivers and lakes, and distinguishes itself for its charming water landscapes. The Chagan Lake, covering an area of 400 square kilometers in the Changgu Mongolian Autonomous County, is one of the 10 largest freshwater lakes in China and also home to some 70 species of fish. Its name is derived from the Mongolian word meaning white lake, as Chagan is densely covered with lush translucent reeds. The lake area is not only a major fishery and reed production base in Jilin, but also one of the most famous scenic destinations in the region. The lake is surrounded by a vast sea of pasture and wetlands, which provide a paradise for many wild animals and plants. In recent years, the local government has installed a wealth of modern tourist facilities around the lake area and turned it into a pleasant and attractive tourist resort. It is an hour's ride to Chagan Lake from Songyuan City. The whole area is divided into several parts, including a fishing village, an ethnic Mongolian village, and a botanic garden. So visitors can entertain themselves with beautiful scenery and interesting activities and dampen their slavering taste buds with fresh aquatic food. But I think the best time to go there may be in July and August, when the annual Mongolian Folklore Tourist Festival is held along the lake. From Chagan Lake, you can also take a cruise to enjoy the idyllic grasslands and the rice fields along the 54-kilometer-long Yingsong Canal, which was dug 20 years ago and links Chagan Lake with the faraway Songhua River. 15 kilometers northeast of Chagan Lake are the ruins of the 1,000-year-old Tahu City, which was a thriving city during the Liao and Jin dynasties. The city is square in shape and surrounded by 6-meter-high earth walls. Today, we can still find many historical remains at the site, such as the city moat, watchtowers, terraces, workshops, and tombs. As one of the best-preserved city ruins from the Liao and Jin periods, Tahu City attracts historians and visitors alike. Dabusu Lake in Qian'an County is another famous tourist site in Songyuan. The saline lake is called a treasure bowl by the local people because it is abundant in wide variety of minerals and offers a wide range of revenue-generating sources for the locals. Like Chagan Lake, Dabusu is also covered with thick reeds and water plants, which attract numerous birds to the area. The lake region is a haven for some 100 species of fowl, including wild geese, barks, swans, red-crowned cranes, and many other birds whose name can only be remembered and pronounced by ornithologists. When visitors arrive, they are approached by thousands of birds, chirping happily over your head as if extending you a warm welcome. Enjoying their singing and dancing, you can but be deeply impressed by the harmonious bond between man and nature. Of course, there are many other places for you to explore the poetic beauty of watery Songyuan, including the Longkang Spring, the Lotus Pond Scenic Area, and the second Songhua River. With a history of over 1,000 years, Songyuan is also renowned for its abundant historical remains. In addition to the Tahu City ruins, the Fuyu Ancient Temple Complex, Changgang Bronze Cultural Ruins, and the Stone Bridge in Wanshan are all famous historical sites well worth a visit. Transportation to Songyuan is easy and convenient. You can go there by train or a long-distance bus from any major city in northeast China. The city also has rail links with Russia and Mongolia. Okay, that's all for this edition of On the Road, also the last edition before the Spring Festival. This is Yun Feng, wishing you a Happy New Year.
Thank you, Yun Feng, and with that, we've come to the end of the last edition of China Horizons in the Year of the Horse. Hope you've enjoyed it. Next week, we'll bring you a special series of programs to ring in the Year of the Sheep. China Horizons will be back on Wednesday, February the 12th. On behalf of all of us on the Horizons team, I'm Wu Jia saying goodbye and wishing you a very happy and prosperous New Year.